Hello and welcome to the Silver King's War. I'm Michael Sievers, the writer, producer, and creator of this podcast series about my father's Second World War as a B-26 bombardier. Today we are in Marauder Men, the second play, and we are in Act 1 called The Flying Dude, Scene 2, Baltimore City Council. And it begins with Michael, the narrator. Within two decades, Glenn Martin became an American icon and industrial giant. He built planes in Los Angeles and Cleveland, had a brief 1917 merger with Orville and Wilbur Wright in Dayton, Ohio, and New York City. The federal government was his best client, and he wasn't business partner material. This scene, in April of 1928, is Glenn Martin speaking with the mayor of Baltimore, William F. Bruning, and the entire city council about moving his manufacturing company to Baltimore. The scene inside City Hall, which is an elaborate historic council chamber, with elected officials sitting in an arc of chairs above the witness table. Glenn Martin sits before a microphone and table directly below the mayor, and his mother, Minta, sits in the first row of seats just off Glenn's right shoulder. This is Michael, the narrator. The rise from Santa Ana to this Baltimore City Hall hearing scene presents a man, Glenn L. Martin, whose mother, Minta, left her husband and daughter to follow this son throughout their lives. The years of success masked a deep personal family drama of ambition and ambivalence about Clarence and Della Martin. Mother and son abandoned a fractured family to follow Glenn's ideas and patrons to a grand life in Cleveland and Baltimore. Clarence seems satisfied to sell cars, and Della, now 7 years into her Patton State Hospital commitment, was invisible to the family. America entered World War I in April 1917. Between 1912 and 1917, Glenn Martin taught William Boeing to fly, opened a plant in Los Angeles, California, flew Mary Pickford in the movie The Girl of Yesterday, hired Donald Douglas, and formed a brief partnership in the Wright Martin Aircraft Corporation in New York City. Those money men had no interest in airplanes. The Cleveland decade was productive for Martin Manufacturing. It began with financing partners led by Alva Bradley, whom Martin approached to build planes for the city's growing industrial base. It was a mutual recruitment that provided important leverage for both men. Ohio became Martin's base for bomber design and production. He was 32. The Baltimore City pursuit of Martin Manufacturing was thorough, and it began in 1925. The city and its industrialists competed nationally for more industry. The Association of Commerce, led by its Industrial Bureau recruiters, pressed Glenn Martin to move to Baltimore. The negotiations were complex, and Glenn Martin had leverage that Baltimore's city council couldn't counter. This is Glenn Martin, the flying dude. The industrial competition fueled innovation between the wars, and I was certain that the next war would be one in the skies. We designed and built the MB-1, the Martin Bomber Number 1. It was a two-engine, 400 horsepower, 125 mile per hour biplane. The War Department ordered 20 planes for the Army in January 1918, and I delivered 9 by the armistice on November 11th of that year. Then I met Billy Mitchell, who was the Army Assistant Chief for Air Services, and together we blew the Navy away with a Martin bomber demonstration off the Virginia Capes in 1921. The Navy, ordering seaplanes, became the company's consistent client. The imperative for our products and better water access made a Martin manufacturing move essential. One more relationship was critical and timely for me. I knew Franklin Delano Roosevelt. We met when FDR was an assistant secretary of the Navy for Woodrow Wilson, and this connection led to Martin Manufacturing's long-term service to the Navy. My link to FDR began 2 decades before the presidency. Born 4 years apart, our professional lives converged again when the B-26, my Martin Marauder, became our most famous product for the Army Air Corps. FDR, in deference to my importance and essential status as a major part of the defense economy, visited our Omaha, Nebraska plant in April of 1943. The Air Corps selected Omaha as a second B-26 facility to move production away from East or West Coast sites. And later, we built the B-29 Superfortress, which delivered the weapons that ended the Pacific War. My decision to leave Cleveland wasn't easy. I bought out my Elva Bradley Partners in 1919 and began searching the country for airport sites. Being close to my clients in Washington, D.C., which was essential, meant an East Coast search. C.A. Van Dusen, my trusted business manager, traveled from Philadelphia to Florida, seeking the best land and political leverage. I sold my Cleveland operation to the Great Lakes Aircraft Corporation. My Maryland Martin Corporation started in December of 1928, and our first Middle River building, which was 300,000 square feet, opened on October 7th, 1929. Then the stock market crashed. This is the narrator, Michael, as he returns to the New Yorker, December 5th, 1942 issue, to read more about the Hero for Business Reasons Part 2, this time on page 30, by Elva Johnston. And it began, "Martin's idea that the aerial age was not ending but just starting was quickly vindicated. In a few years, the demand for Martin bombers and other types was too great for his Cleveland plant, and in 1929, he moved to a 1,260-acre site at Middle River near Baltimore. At a civic gathering in Baltimore, he predicted that he would be employing 10,000 men there within a few years. This was taken at the time as the comforting old-school Chamber of Commerce talk. Today, his employees number several times that figure." As the lights go up on this scene, it's important to consider that what will happen here is of substantial consequence to Baltimore as a city and to the region. And it begins with Baltimore's mayor, William F. Bruning. "Mr. Martin, thank you for meeting with the city council today. We know your time is valuable, so let's begin." And Glenn Martin, the flying dude, responding, "Thank you, Mayor Bruning, and members of the City Council. I am here with my mother, Mrs. Arminta Martin, to explain again my requirements for a manufacturing site in Baltimore." And the mayor, looking down on Glenn Martin, "We understand that your long deliberations and negotiations with the Association of Commerce's Industrial Bureau have been difficult. However, you must know that the city's financial capacity has constraints." And Glenn Martin, looking up at the mayor, "Yes, Mr. Mayor, I know that the Maryland state legislation guiding the city's loan parameters mandates development within Baltimore's jurisdiction. And the Bureau staff, since they first approached me about a Baltimore move in Cleveland in 1925, has been diligent throughout a tedious site search." Mayor Bruning responds, "I agree, Mr. Martin. The Industrial Bureau has supported the Council's vision to expand Baltimore's industrial base. Our offer is generous with airport space and land for Martin Manufacturing. However, it's not clear that we can meet your demands right now." And Glenn Martin to the mayor, "Yes, Mr. Mayor, we are stuck. I am ready to leave Cleveland and build a world-class facility for Baltimore and the Mid-Atlantic region. However, I may have no choice but to continue our search from Philadelphia to Miami." As the lights go down on this scene, Michael continues to read from the December 5th, 1942 New Yorker story, Hero for Business Reasons, Part 2 on page 32 by Alva Johnston. Quote, "In the last 3 years, the output of the Martin factory has expanded at a titanic rate. Orders running into the billions have been piled on Martin. The 140,000-pound Mars, the largest seaplane in the world, was built by Martin largely at his own expense. He has completed designs for building a 250,000-pounder, which is large enough to satisfy Major Alexander de Seversky, the most enthusiastic exponent of giant aircraft, and he is ready to start on a 500,000-pounder. His output of other types has reached staggering dimensions, but the details are secret." This is the end of scene 2 of Marauder Men. You are listening to The Silver King's War.